change and would form a habit in our nature, that is hard to cope up with in a way that without answering the greed of our inner beast would feel weak, vulnerable, and not worthy of respect. And trust me, that sometimes happens. Now, we usually hear stuffs like this and think that, oh, that's the dilemma of the upper class and not me. My car is a random one. I have a small house and a poor pocket, and nothing of that is related to me. But the truth is, we all could fall prey to these mundane things. If I don't buy that certain house, car, even that certain dress, or, I don't know, cosmetic issues, whatever, depending on our lifestyle and dreams, you know, it might differ, I'd feel sad and think of life as hell. In fact, all these demands are the chains and shackles that entangle us and turn us into slaves. While adopting a simple life is to revolt against these chains and control the whims and desires that might destroy us. So there's us. There's plenty much of things that we desire to have. And also, there is this thing inside of us that might help us to control it all. Before we go for more on how to live a simple life, let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Hello. Welcome back to A Better Life. We're talking about simple life and how to get there, because it's not easy. Well, our role models, who are Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, have always practiced what they preached. They truly are the best examples to follow. Actually, the truth is coming out of whatever they have told us, and the narrations, through the actions they've done, and through the things they've passed down to us. Now, the truth is that we can never live the pious life they practiced, but we can at least do our best. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha tells us a lot about the journey of life and how fleeting the moments are, and count these as the main reasons not to get sinked in the shadows of life. He says, "This world is a crossway, not a resting place, and people in this crossway are of two types. Some sell and enslave themselves, and this way go to destruction. And some others, on the contrary, redeem and buy themselves out, and this way find freedom and salvation. Somewhere else, regarding the abandonment of pleasures and of the splendors of life, he says, 'O life, go away from me. I have relieved myself from your claws. I have escaped your traps, and I have evaded your stumbling blocks. Go away from me. I swear to God that I will not surrender to you. You may make me follow you miserably, but I would not give you the rein. I will not let you lead me where you wish. I swear to God that I've made my soul so strong as to be happy with a loaf of bread with some salt as its stew.'" Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also says, "Piety means the abandonment of anything which separates man from Allah without regretting this abandoning." Now, with all what we said, we come to conclude that whatever that exists in our life as the means of perfect living actually is something that we should not go too extreme for it. What I mean is that, yes, true, as human beings, we have so much of needs, and maybe some of us has some very much big of dreams, and you know how life works out. These splendors are in a way that they would shine in front of you, and this ostensible show of a life that is full of flashing things is always something attracting the attention. But the truth is that we must control it, and it should not stay there forever. I mean, the urge to go for those things. You know, after 1 year, 2 year, 3 years of achieving different things, then everything would turn into a banal thing. And it would go just like something that would be so mundane, so not giving you any special feeling.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Even if you go too far for achieving whatever you feel that is needed for your life, then in the end, you're not going to feel satisfied. Because the greed inside human beings has been put there in a way that we will never be satiated with whatever we achieve. So the brain actually would give us through its logic this thought that it's better for us to go for things through much of thinking and to know that this life is not going to stay forever. I do not mean to say that we should not go for a perfect life, we should not buy different things, or we should not, answer all the needs that we have. No, even our religion does not say that. Even in our religion, we've been asked to work hard in order to achieve whatever that is perfect for our living. But the problem is with going too far away, with going to the extremes. Do not let the flashings of life turn you into a beast that is not having peace in their life and that is not sleeping the night well just because there is a thought eating them from the inside. So in every single step of our life, we should know that there's an end to this life and it's not going to be eternal. So whatever we do, we should focus on the very fact not to sell ourselves into this mundane world, because no matter how long it goes, no matter how far away we would live in this world, one day we would never wake up again. I mean, there would be no other days for us to continue. So it is not actually wise to sell ourselves very cheaply. That's all I have to say for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah shower you with His blessings. Thank you again. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, He knows.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, suggests the bloc's economy will have contracted for a six-month period up to the end of March 2023. This means recession. Inflation is forecast to stay high for longer than initially anticipated. Uncertainty surrounds the medium to long-term picture also.
The largest threat comes from adverse developments on the gas market and the risk of shortages, especially not this winter but next winter.
As EU energy sanctions against Russia appear to backfire, business and consumer confidence continues to decline across the 27-country bloc.
We're very concerned, particularly for people that are on lower incomes that are very much affected by the higher energy prices.
I'm afraid that it can
get much worse before it gets better.
The price of the energy is so high, the price of the products, I think it's a thing of everything.
EU leaders firmly blame Moscow for the crisis amid the conflict in Ukraine. However, some commentators claim the United States has used NATO to manufacture the war.
America is fighting against multilateral world, but basically is fighting against our freedoms, our democracy, and everything it pretends it stands for.
The EU says it will continue to fund the Ukrainian army and government no matter what the cost. Back home, the only good news is that employment figures remain positive. Just modest damage to the EU labour market is forecast for 2023. It is an area that is being monitored very closely by the Commission, as there's broad consensus. A sharp rise in unemployment would represent the final nail in the coffin for the EU economy. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Diplomatic tension between Italy and France keeps mounting as the French NGO-run search and rescue ship Ocean Viking reached the French port of Toulon with its load of 234 asylum seekers on Friday. The ship had been refused a port of safety by Italy's far-right government for around 3 weeks, a decision that the French government slammed as irresponsible and inhumane. In response to the situation, Paris suspended plans to take in 3,500 refugees currently in Italy, calling on all the countries in the EU's migrant relocation mechanism to adopt similar measures.
È la prima nave.
The Ocean Viking, NGO ship that docks in France today, is the first NGO ship to have ever docked in France, and it has 234 migrants. This generated a very tough reaction with respect to Italy, which has allowed almost 90,000 immigrants to enter since the start of the year. 90,000! All NGO ships dock in Italy. What makes us angry? That Italy has to be the only country to provide a disembarkation port. This is not written in any agreement. France's response was aggressive and unjustified.
A third of the 234 asylum seekers on board the NGO ship will be relocated in France, while 4 passengers with serious health difficulties were transferred to a French hospital. This is not the first diplomatic rift between Italy and France in recent years. In 2019, Paris recalled its ambassador to Rome for consultations, after then Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio urged members of the Yellow Vest movement to continue with a protest against the French government.
There is a clear resemblance between the rift that took place in 2019 and the present one. Both cases are just a mere provocation on the part of nationalist, populist Italian executives. This tension between Italy and France is the result of the insubstantiality of the EU's migration policy.
While EU countries keep failing to collectively assume responsibility on the migrant issue, around 20,000 asylum seekers have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea since 2014, while tens of thousands are stuck in Libyan detention centres where torture, sexual violence and abuse are rife. Max Civili, Rome.
Walthamstow, a town in East London, home to more than 150,000 people and the longest outdoor market in Europe.
It also happens to be one of the poorest areas, where a national cost of living crisis is pushing more and more people to the brink, and less money in people's pockets has meant less business for the shops and stalls here.
Couple that with soaring utility bills and increased prices that make running a successful business a real challenge.
My weekly sale is like half and half now, this time especially. For example, I'm earning about a weekly 1,000. For example, it's go 5. It's half and half now. And the people are scary, they don't spend much. They are very choosy now.
Quiet, very quiet. We see the market empty. Because we have people, but like pass, just on the pass. Nobody do shop because they don't have money. But rent now high, but energy right now very, very high. Gas high, and because they're expensive right now.
The cost of living crisis has fed into the housing market as well, forcing Anne, who works in a coffee shop, to move house.
A couple of months ago, I was living in a house share, but the landlord got really, like, worried about the cost of living, and he, like, tried so hard to, like, increase the prices little by little, and we ended up, like, having an argument about it, and he ended up, like, evicting me because, like, I didn't think it was fair, but he was forcing us to do stuff. So now, like, I'm paying, like, a really high price for, like, such a small room, no, like, living room or anything.
More than 6,000 people in this area claim universal credit. Recent surveys have found that nearly half of the children here live in poverty. Desperate parents and households are having to rely on charities such as this one to get by. We were told the Roxana Khan Foundation Food Bank gives donations to an increasing 300 households every week. Inflation remains stubbornly in the double digits, and the government has hinted at increased taxes and cuts to public spending. Many here and across the UK will find it even more difficult to make ends meet. Saeed Puriza, Walthamstow, East London.
A recent study published in the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology reveals that a large number of those who sustained eye injuries due to the use of pellet guns in the mainstay of Srinagar between July and November 2016 have suffered some degree of vision loss. The survey conducted on 777 eye operations during the period reveals 80% of the victims have vision limited to counting fingers. 35-year-old Arshid Ahmed, a student of arts, was hit by pellets in both eyes in October 2016. 6 years on, Arshid says his vision of higher studies diminished just like his eyesight.
Initially, I thought things might get better after the operation, but as time passed, it started to get worse. The most hurtful thing for me is that I am dependent. I feel I'm a burden. How long will my family be able to support me?
Arshid's family was more fearful than hesitant to talk, and convincing Arshid to speak to Press TV about his condition was no less than a Herculean task.
I'm often confined to my room. Darkness is my future, although the government has bragged about rehabilitation and support for pellet victims. We're left to helplessness and nothing else, and speaking about my helplessness has now become a crime.
Before the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in 2019, New Delhi used shotguns for almost a decade to quell anti-India demonstrations in Indian-administered Kashmir, resulting in thousands of pellet injuries and the epidemic of vision loss in the region. Following the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, people here might be upset about many things changing in the region. However, a remarkable achievement for government forces is that not even a single pellet gun has been used in the region following a tough crackdown on protesters. Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan for decades. Both lay claims to the region but rule it in parts. India regards Kashmir as an integral part of its territory. Meanwhile, analysts say since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status, New Delhi seems to own everything in Kashmir except the problems of its people. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
The largest ever joint U.S.-South Korea Air Force drills extended into last weekend as North Korea launched more missiles. Pyongyang argues U.S.-led military exercises revived this year are a rehearsal for invasion. Amid reports North Korea may conduct a seventh nuclear test, U.S. officials warned Pyongyang the use of nuclear weapons would end its regime. In South Korea Thursday night, university peace activists gathered for a vigil outside the U.S. embassy, calling for an end to the U.S.-South Korea-Japan alliance and removal of President Yoon. The U.S. has also conducted renewed joint drills with Japan, including a naval fleet review as Tokyo seeks to normalize its military activities.
North Korea faces much stronger conventional forces in the U.S.-South Korea alliance, which is at least partly why it showcases its missile and nuclear deterrence. With the U.S., South Korea, and Japan all bolstering their weapons and military drills, the questions are if and when North Korea will conduct a seventh nuclear test. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Another nationwide election in the United States, and it will be another drawn-out, bitterly fought, and highly divisive process to determine the final outcome for Congress. Starting with the certainties, the last-minute predictions of a Republican red wave did not materialize. They did, however, take control of at least the House of Representatives, but likely with a much smaller majority than many expected. That means America will have a divided federal government, that President Joe Biden's policymaking will be hobbled for his final 2 years, and that the Democratic Party did suffer a significant national-level defeat.
Hasn't anyone had an education? I'm appalled. We had to take the constitutional test. It is so mean-spirited. Our kids are suffering. I have a 24-year-old. They do not like this country. They do not like what's going on. And their lives are hard. This is the American dream. Now they want to take away Medicare.
In a repeat of 2020, the Senate will likely come down to a runoff vote in the state of Georgia to be held on December 6th. That means Americans will have to endure nearly a month of uncertainty.
It's stupid that we would have that, need to take that much time, but part of it's because of a structure of how our, you know, we used to have this done really, you know, just 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We had it done in 2 days, at worst case scenario, you know. But in the last three national elections, it's suddenly become an issue of, you know, we've got all this, you know, false voting, fake voting, blah, blah, blah.
Near universal worries about politically related violence didn't happen on election day, but it increasingly seems to be more accurate to call it election month.
Adding to the growing tension is that controversial ex-president Donald Trump is expected to announce on November 15th that he's running for the presidency again. America may soon be arguing over the 2024 election before the 2022 election has been completely decided.
To the chagrin of Democrats and many Republicans, at least 74% of over 250 Trump-backed candidates were victorious, and so-called 2020 election deniers won repeatedly at top state and federal levels. It appears that the factional split within the Republican Party is more cemented than ever, but the unexpected closeness of the congressional vote reveals that the overall split between America's left and right is more narrow, contested, and sharper than ever. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Ongoing Israeli military raids to the occupied West Bank areas continue under different pretexts. Early on Wednesday, regime forces raided Balata refugee camp in Nablus, killing Palestinian teenager Mahdi Hashash and seriously wounding several others. Dozens more Palestinians suffered suffocation due to tear gas inhalation.
Their main program is ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And the second is to suppress any form of resistance of Palestinian people and to enhance settlements everywhere. So practically, Israel has all the interest in enhancing the oppression against Palestinians. And we've seen even certain escalation during election time because Israeli parties were using Palestinian blood to feed their election purposes.
The Israeli military said it carried out the attack to secure a visit by settlers and members of the Israeli parliament from the Likud party to Joseph Stump, located near Balata refugee camp. The military said in a statement that the Palestinian gunmen fired in the direction of a convoy carrying the party members. The attack comes as the Israeli Knesset members are celebrating the victory of Benjamin Netanyahu's bloc, the Likud, in the recent elections.
Over the last 7 years, we have been resisting the Israeli aggression. We have witnessed escalation of tensions, while calm has prevailed on some occasions. But the current transitional cabinet in Israel needs to prove that it's a right-wing cabinet. I think with the recent escalation of violence against Palestinians, we might witness a real third intifada.
In addition to the military raid to Nablus, Israeli forces stormed Ramallah, Bethlehem and Al-Khalil. Regime forces arrested over a dozen Palestinians, accusing them of carrying out terrorist acts.
Palestinians who have been confronting Israeli military raids warn such crimes and escalation could at the end of the day set off a new intifada or popular uprising against the regime. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Addressing world leaders at the climate summit in Egypt, UN Chief Antonio Guterres says it's a moral imperative for rich countries to help vulnerable countries. Regarding that, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Taliban emphasizes that climate change does not know political borders, and countries which have no role in creating climate crisis have suffered the most damage and should not be ignored.
In recent 4 months, we have witnessed a significant rise in the number of natural disasters in Afghanistan. They include earthquake, flash flood, and drought. According to our assessments, almost 10 million people affected by these disasters need urgent help. We also need international cooperation to deal with impacts of such crises.
Afghanistan emits almost 0.1% of global greenhouse gases. But it is paying the price for growing climate chaos, mostly created by top emitters in the world. The results of climate change, including earthquakes, flash floods, and drought in Afghanistan, drive people towards hunger day by day. OCHA says 97% of Afghans could be too poor to survive without aid by the end of this winter, which shows a 50% rise in 2 years.
I would say 70% of people can't afford their basic needs. People have become poor. It has become much more difficult for many Afghans to buy food. And by winter, the situation would even get worse, I believe.
Previously, we had jobs and we could save for our winter. But now, I work only one day in a 10-day period. Some nights, we only eat bread with tea. We could use the aids if there were any.
According to the United Nations, Afghanistan is the sixth most affected country in the world enduring the consequences of climate change. Immigration, job losses and cropland destruction are the results of climate change. These problems are aggravated by recent political conflicts and severely impact the country's economy. The devastating results of climate change have added to the problems Afghans are facing. International help for this winter could ease the situation for people already grappling with poverty. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bavar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bavar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bavar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships.
The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement, which has been made as a result of the production of Bavar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bavar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bavar air defense system employs three different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Saman Kujrip, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
More than 7 years have passed since the Saudi aggression against Yemen, and the only achievement of the aggressor from this crime is the killing and displacement of millions of innocent people in the shadow of the silence of the United Nations and human rights institutions. Both the United States and Britain have played a malicious role in thwarting peace efforts in Yemen. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Lebanon's Al-Mayadeen television network has more for us on this story. Yemen's popular resistance movement Ansar Allah warns about the United States and Britain's fresh malicious intentions in the war-ravaged country. Referring to Yemen's biggest province, which spans from the country's center towards its eastern areas, Ali al-Qahoum, a member of Ansarullah's political bureau, said, "There is a direct U.S. military presence in Yemen and an influx of U.S. forces, specifically in Hadhramaut province." Referring to Yemen's second largest province that neighbors Hadhramaut to the east, he added, "There is also an influx of British forces into Al-Mahra." The United States and Britain were preparing for a fresh round of escalation in Yemen, he further warned without elaborating. The Western countries have been contributing heavily and unabatedly to a war of aggression that the Saudi Arabia-led coalition has been waging against Yemen since 2015. The coalition has been seeking unsuccessfully, though, to restore Yemen's power to the country's former Western and Riyadh-aligned officials. The war has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and spawned the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Washington and London have been providing the coalition with direct arms, logistical and political support, including through outfitting it with precision-guided ammunition that the Saudi-led military forces have been using against the civilian population of Yemen. Al-Qahoum said new U.S. and British military delegations had arrived in Yemen recently. Reporting on Wednesday, 2nd of November, Yemeni media cited informed local sources as saying that Hadhramaut provincial governor Mahbud bin Mahdi had held a face-to-face meeting with the U.S. delegation in his office. However, the Ansarullah official asserted that despite the Western states' apparent preparations for a new flare-up in Yemen, the Yemenis are ready to defend their dignity and every inch of their country. Yemen's press agency has more for us on this story. Amid Washington's aggressive attempts to wrest control over energy reserves and plunder natural resources in conflict-plagued Yemen, a new batch of U.S. military forces has entered the country's oil-rich eastern province of Hadhramaut. Citing informed local sources who asked not to be named, the agency reported that Hadhramaut provincial governor Mahbud bin Mahdi had had a face-to-face meeting with a U.S. delegation in his office. During the meeting, Mahbud bin Mahdi complained to the American military officials about the Sana'a-based National Salvation Government's decision to ban the Saudi-led coalition from exporting the Yemeni crude oil, asserting that the decision would have adverse effects on the global energy market. The development comes as visits by Western officials to eastern Yemen has lately witnessed an accelerating trend, the most recent of which was the visit of French ambassador to Aden, Jean-Marie Safa, in late September. The visits are viewed as Western effort to secure its energy needs against the backdrop of the Russian special operation in Ukraine. Back on 28th of July, a batch of U.S. military forces landed at Al-Qaeda Airport in Yemen's southeastern province of Al-Mahra on board a flight from Riyadh International Airport in Mukalla, which lies on the shores of the Arabian Sea and about 480 kilometers east of Aden. The Yemen press agency reported at the time that the arrival of the U.S. forces was followed by a major disruption to internet connectivity in the Seyhout district, blaming the internet blackout on the installation of sophisticated surveillance devices by American military forces. Earlier, a top-ranking Yemeni official said U.S. and British military trainers had arrived at a port in Mahra province on vessels loaded with munitions as well as military and logistical equipment. The provincial governor, Al-Qatabi Ali Hussein Al-Faraj, said on 26th of June that large arms shipments about military vessels disembarked at the port of Nishtun and that British and American military trainers were stationed at Al-Qaeda International Airport. Faraj said at the time, The Saudi-led coalition of aggression is involved in the smuggling and trade of narcotics in the area in order to perpetuate insecurity, to advance its goals, and deter the local population from confronting the invaders. Yemen's official Sabah news agency has more for us. The head of Yemen's Supreme Political Council has hit out at U.S. Special Envoy for Yemen, Tim Lenderking, for scuttling efforts to extend the United Nations brokered truce, describing the truce situation in the country as a time bomb. Mahdi al-Mashat said in Sana'a on Monday, 7th of November, "We are in a no-peace, no-war state. While we had reached a good level of understanding during previous rounds of talks, the American envoy's trip to the region thwarted these efforts." Referring to Lenderking's journey to the region starting on 11th of October to purportedly support the United Nations-led negotiations to extend truce in Yemen, al-Mashat said, "While the U.S. envoy pretends to be a peace dove, he's rather an ill-omened owl." Mahdi al-Mashat said, "Some aggressor countries which benefit from the war in Yemen are pushing the country towards a political and military explosion," citing the U.S. envoy's malicious role in the failure of the peace talks. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war in Yemen back in March of 2015 in collaboration with its Arab allies. The objective was to reinstall the Riyadh-friendly regime of Abdurrabb Mansour Hadi and crushed the popular Ansarullah resistance movement of Yemen, which has been running state affairs in the absence of a functional government in Sana'a. But the Saudi-led coalition has failed to meet any of its objectives. The United Nations brokered truce between the Saudi-led coalition and Yemen first came into effect back in April and has been extended twice since then. In mid-October, Yemeni Foreign Minister Hisham Sharaf said there would be no talks about the extension of the six-month truce, which expired on 2nd of October, unless the nation's legitimate demands were fully met. He stressed that the Sana'a-based National Salvation Government will make every effort to establish just and dignified peace throughout the country.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope. Tour the pitch. On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, you're listening to me from RRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I am Bita, a medical student at your service, and today I have the pleasure to have Brother Muzaffar with me. Hello, brother. How are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Choo-choo-ka-choo.
Assalamu alaikum. It's the Youth Station for you. Why does nobody do that? They hold back, and then they
Okay, go on, as the way you like.
These are a few of my favorite things. You know that song?
No.
No? It's from some old movie. But what are some of your favourite things, sister?
Actually, it's somehow so vast, you know, your question is so vast to answer, but there are many things that I like. One of them is travelling. As you know, even travelling is suggested in our religion that there is a verse that tells you go and see the world and how God Almighty created the first creation.
Yeah.
And I love travelling because when you travel and go see the world and the cultures, everything, you know, it feels like you are a little part of this universe. You are nothing. And this feeling of being nothing always seems something really valuable to me. And this is one of my favorite things to do, go around the world, see other people, you know, different colors, different languages, and so on, which makes me really excited, you know.
I used to love traveling. I hate traveling now.
Why?
I can't stand traveling. Well, first 9/11 happened, so then there was a whole terrorist thing, and then you were always scared to go in the airport because, you know, you're going to be looked at like you're some sort of criminal.
Yeah.
And then Corona happened, and it made it so many times more worse.
It was a disaster.
Oh, God. And you know, now if anybody even mentions traveling, it just makes me cringe because you have to think about the vaccine passport and everything.
You have a negative perspective on that.
You're really bothering me. Yeah, well, you know.
So don't go to airport. Go see your own country. Here, we have many beautiful places to see.
I guess so.
What is the problem with that?
I don't have a car.
Nice. So, I don't know. This is your problem, actually. Okay. I don't like to talk about it. I love traveling and I won't change my mind.
All right. I'm not trying to change your opinion. But no, that's good. Traveling is definitely a good thing. And you're right. Islam does recommend it. What other things are your favorite things?
Language? Yeah, learning a new language is one of my favorite hobbies, you know, in this life.
Are you serious?
I am serious about that because whenever I go through learning another language, it's like opening a new window to the world, actually. Because, first of all, I love the pronunciations. When I try to pronounce different words that doesn't exist in my own language, in my mother tongue, it feels like I'm doing something really cool. It may look silly for you. I don't care.
No, it's fine. I mean, I think that's a brilliant thing as well. What languages? Because when I was back in school, they forced us to study French and I didn't really like it.
Why? Come on, French is so sweet, I think.
It has a feminine and masculine for everything. Granted, Arabic has that as well. And,
But for
Arabic, it's worth it because, you know, it's Arabic. It's the language of Islam. But French, it's like, bonjour, je m'appelle.
Come on, you cannot talk about that in this way because I love it because it's literature.
What the heck? What languages did you enjoy?
Actually, the first one was French that I really enjoyed most because
ça va.
Yeah, ça va bien. Because you know what?
Très bien.
When I was a child, I liked the book Le Petit Prince or The Little Prince by Saint-Antoine d'Exupéry, which was really interesting for me when I was a little child. It sounds really, you know, magical, mysterious with all those elements. I didn't have the correct sense of understanding the literature of that book at that age. But when I just grew older, I understood that there is a deep meaning behind that story. And it was really nice for me that what could be the actually mother tongue of this book would be.
Yeah.
And because of that reason, I went to French classes and I learned French to read Le Petit Prince in French. And
it's actually brilliant. We got journeying, traveling, and we got learning languages. What other things
Tell me about yourself. Why only me?
That's so simple. I'm a simple guy. I like chocolate. I like cake. I like sweets.
Painting.
I love
slim.
Painting.
Come on.
And
I love
going to breaks. I love break time. So we're going to just go for a short break and we'll see you after, inshallah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to the studio. We're talking about our favorite things. So sister said some brilliant things, which were journeying, traveling and learning languages. And I said some pretty simple things. You know, I like chocolate and I like break times and I like just
but our dear listeners aren't here to see you that your service thing, that I cannot understand that you like this sort of thing, because this sort of thing will make you a fat person, I'm sure about that. And I cannot, you know, just handle this.
I like painting.
Me too.
There's something called, right? You like painting?
Yeah, of course.
I love painting. Watercolors?
No, not like that. Not that. Only black and white.
Okay. I like drawing as well. I like writing. I can write all night if my kids and wife let me. my family, they're part of my favorite things. COI Radio. I love IRIB English Radio. I got lots of favorite things.
Thank you. That's your amount of things.
Okay, now the crux of the discussion. Which of these favorite things makes your life more easy or more tolerable?
I don't like the word tolerable, first of all. At first, I want to tell you that. What does that mean, more tolerable?
Because you're tolerating life.
No, I'm not tolerating life. I'm living life.
It's because you're young.
Life.
Okay, you don't have
experience. I don't like that sentence.
All right?
Don't talk to me like that. You're wrong for something.
The dark realities of this life, all right? You need to find ways to make life more tolerable as you get older and you realize how sinister this place really is.
This is why I think when you grow older, you're like, okay, everything is bad. You don't know anything about the difficulties of life. And because of that, you have to grow older, then you will understand that life is just a kind of thing that you have to tolerate it. Oh, come on. And this nagging, I hate it, because no matter what, but I will always be positive about this matter. I'm not a positive person.
Do you know Imam Khomeini, the leader, he actually said that the idealistic vision that the youth have is a very good thing and they need to maintain it. And if you notice, there are certain traits of that youthful attitude towards life, the universe and everything that great people like Imam Khomeini and others as well have actually maintained even in their old age. They never became cynical like I'm expressing right now.
Like you are.
I am. do you know the youths of the cave? You know, Ashab al-Kahf from the Surah of the Quran, right? They're referred to as the youths of the cave. Why does it refer to them as youths? Part of the secret is this attitude that they had, you know? Even at that old age, they didn't say, oh, society is broken. Forget it. There's nothing we can do. They said, no, okay, we're going to go to a cave. They're going to travel. If they have to learn a new language, they're going to learn a new language. They're going to do whatever it takes. They're going to go to that cave so that they can be free of the shirk of the society and actually serve Allah alone. I mean, that's just beautiful. But coming back to reality for a moment, life sucks and you need a way to
What does that mean, even? Even in my most difficult times, I've never said such a thing about life.
Sister, this is so funny. I'm sorry. Your most difficult time in life?
What experience have you had so far?
You know nothing of the difficulties of life.
No, it doesn't mean I know nothing. It doesn't mean that I don't have them. I have a lot of difficulties. I had experienced some difficulties in my life. And go to the first question that you asked me, that what are the most actually favorite things in this life that I like to do to make my life easier? One of them is making plan for the future. I like it.
You enjoy making plans for the future.
I can't pretend that's okay.
You enjoy making plans for the future. Okay, when I think about the future, I get filled with this deep, dark dread, and I just think, okay, Muzaffar, just take it one day at a time. Which world does she come from? I have three kids. I have all sorts of things to worry about, and I'm just like, okay, just take it one day at a time. We're going to make it.
Yeah, I know that. Maybe, for example, more responsibilities means you just don't like to think about future anymore. But because I have a strong imagination somehow, I like to think about future and making plans for that. Maybe sometimes I feel like I'm so ambitious, but I like it even. by myself.
Oh, wait. I'm going to come back to that because I'm really curious to understand what
kind of
things.
I talk about my plans.
It's really good to have a youth on the show who has a very youthful outlook as well. So I was having a discussion a while back with an uncle, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, I guess, 20, 30 years older than me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was asking him about the future and mm-hmm. the zuhur of Imam Zaman and yeah. the world that we're going to build, inshallah, where there's going to be no poverty. You know, people are going to be looking for somebody to give charity to and they're not going to find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a beautiful world that a woman will be able to walk from one side of the world to another side unaccompanied and she'll be completely safe.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. But that's the kind of world that we're building, a world of safety, of justice, of peace, of tolerance, of respect. It's just so beautiful, right?
It is.
So I was talking to him about these things and he said, it's not going to happen. And he just flat out, he's like, come on, it's just in our lifetime, definitely not. And maybe in a...
He
had that kind of really negative outlook, right?
Yeah.
And I was just flabbergasted because I was like, well, we're supposed to believe in these things. That's what our iman is. And this was not a secular person in any way. He was a religious person. He'd come here for ziyarah and everything. But he still had that negative outlook of the future. He just couldn't believe it. It's like in Iran, you know, in the time of the Shah, on our way down here, the taxi driver was telling me how, you know, it was so weird. People, my mum used to tell me, this is before the revolution, he was saying that his mum used to tell him not to go out after 6 p.m. because, you know, you could get stabbed, you could get killed. There was no real safety. And I was like, wow, that's what the West is like. And nobody could have believed that the revolution would happen. And here we are 40 years later, right? So part of our faith is to believe in the impossible almost. But I want to come back to your idea of the future. What do you actually think about that gives you happiness and hope of the future? And how does that make you...
About myself, actually. Yeah. I'm not a selfish person, but mm-hmm. I think I have the potential to change what I want to change. I don't want to change the world. I don't want to change the people. I don't want to change myself. You know, it's not like change first yourself and then you would be the change in the world. No, I don't like that much kind of cliches or something. But I think if I try my best, I will do something for humanity. And, you know, I'm searching for that. Maybe that is somehow so ambitious to believe or something. I want to believe in that, that I can do it. And you know, because I want to do it, there is kind of motivation in me that always it was there. And one of the reasons that I've chosen this way, I mean a medication or something, medical sciences actually, that this is a kind of touchable way to change the world, you know. There are many ways actually, from religion parts to even scientific parts, mathematics or something, but this was what I want about the future.
May Allah give you success, inshallah.
Thank you.
May He give you extraordinary help.
My pleasure.
You are going to face difficulties. And the very, very important thing which you've reminded me of is to hold on to that dream that you have up until the very end. Remember the story of Prophet Yusuf, right?
Yeah.
He was given that dream. He was given that vision of the future. And straight after, he's thrown in the well, then he's put into a prison, then he has to go through all sorts of trials and problems and issues, but he never lets go. And that's really what it's all about. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, and inshallah, we'll discuss more in the future.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.